I first became interested in treating patients with gout when I was a registrar. And part of the reason for that is it's an incredibly rewarding condition to treat because it's incredibly painful for patients. And if you can treat it quickly and effectively, it makes a massive difference to patients' lives. We also know in the rheumatology world that it's a very well worked out mechanism of pathogenesis for gout. So we understand what triggers it and therefore what treatments can help settle it down. So a couple of reasons why I'm interested in gout particularly. I was then also asked to write some articles on gout by one of the bosses I was working for at the time. And as with anything in life, the more you learn about it, the more interest that you have in it, the more interest that then domino effects into. Gout is a metabolic condition caused by deposition of crystals of monosodium urate into predominantly joints, but they can deposit into other areas of soft tissue around the body. And sometimes when those crystals are triggered, they cause a very inflammatory response. And in fact, gout is one of the most inflammatory conditions and painful conditions that a patient can experience. The crystals then, if left untreated over years, coalesce together to form chalky deposits material called tophi. And when these deposit in joint areas, they can cause irritation to the joint and cause erosion of the joint, which then leads to joint disability. As gout predominantly likes to affect the colder aspects of the body, joints, and those joints that have got a little bit of damage in them already by osteoarthritis, the feet are often the place where the gout will start. And as you can imagine, being a weight-bearing joint, if you have damage that's permanent to those joints, it can lead to a lot of disability and ongoing long-term pain for patients. Purines are part of the body's protein building blocks, and uric acid is one of the end products of purine metabolism, and therefore when purines are degraded, they will eventually form uric acid. If uric acid levels build up in the body, then they can spill over and form crystals that can then become gout and the acute attacks of gout that we identify with. We also are aware that in the purine pathway, that at the end of the pathway in birds, uric acid is then further metabolized into a substance called allantoin, which is excreted in bird poo. However, humans have lost the enzyme over evolutionary period that can form allantoin, and therefore the end product of purine metabolism in human beings is uric acid. And if this isn't excreted efficiently through the kidney, the levels can build up in the body and cause something called hyperuricemia, which is a build-up of uric acid. And if you have hyperuricemia, that is a very high risk factor for developing gout and gouty arthritis. The main risk factors for developing gout are having a high uric acid level or hyperuricemia, and also gender is important. We know it's more common in men, and that's in part due to them having higher uric acid levels than women. We also know that in premenopausal women, the hormones protect them against developing gout and having a high urate. Other common risk factors are what we call the metabolic syndrome, so obesity, diabetes or glucose intolerance, and also patients with heart disease on particular medications, particularly diuretics, low-dose aspirin, and also patients on blood pressure medication and patients who may have high cholesterol. More recently, the science behind gout has been looked at over the past 10 to 15 years, and we know that there's a large genetic effect in the risk of developing gout, and that certain polymorphisms that can affect the way the kidney is made can have an effect on the excretion of uric acid through the kidney. And some of those polymorphisms, URAT1 is the most commonly known one, affect the way that uric acid is excreted through the proximal tubule of the kidney. And therefore, in this group of patients, urate is held onto, and therefore your uric acid levels in the blood are likely to be higher. Urate, which is the end product of purine metabolism, is also excreted via the kidney, and therefore if patients have kidney disease or any genetic makeup that alters the way the urate is excreted through the kidney, there may be a build-up and under excretion of urate through the kidney, which predisposes the patient to hyperuricemia and therefore increases the risk of gout. As well as under excretion of uric acid in the kidney, sometimes there are syndromes that can cause oversynthesis of uric acid. These conditions are extremely rare and often would be diagnosed in early childhood. The most commonly known one of those syndromes is something called Lesch-Nyhan syndrome, and this develops when there is deficiency of an enzyme that affects the negative feedback loop of purine metabolism, and therefore there's overproduction of uric acid. These children also often have a very low IQ and have lots of other mental disabilities associated with it. So it's something that we generally diagnose when the children are young. There are familial forms of gout whereby there is a very strong family history of gouty arthritis, and this is probably more related to changes within the kidney architecture itself, causing the filtration of urate to be poor, and therefore we have some families where the father, the grandfather, the sons, and some of maybe the daughters very rarely may have gouty arthritis and develop it at a young age, so maybe in their 20s, whereas the average age of most people developing their gouty arthritis is in their 40s and 50s. However, we know as people are getting fatter and also taking more medications for blood pressure and diabetes, the age that we start diagnosing gout is becoming younger as well. Unfortunately, there is a misperception that gout is a self-inflicted condition, and this is actually deeply untrue, and it often results in patients not wanting to access healthcare professionals to manage their gout and potentially manage the long-term complications of that because they feel slightly ashamed about having the condition. Unfortunately, it's a little bit of an old wives' tale that red wine causes gout, and this developed back in the Middle Ages when red wines and ports were kept in lead-lined canisters, and actually patients were getting lead poisoning, and one of the complications of lead poisoning is that it can cause inflammation of the joints, and that was not gouty arthritis, it was lead poisoning. And unfortunately, this misconception has followed through into modern day medicine, where many GPs have learnt about this at medical school, and the myth has persisted. So we need to do a lot of re-education amongst healthcare professionals and patients that in people with gouty arthritis, it is the only curable form of arthritis that we have, but the only way we can cure it is by treating it. So patients need to come forward to see healthcare professionals that have an interest in the disease. Primary gout is gout that occurs for no obvious background reason. secondary gout is generally because there is an underlying reason for it to occur, such as the very rare conditions Lesch-Nyhan syndrome, Kelly-Siegmiller syndrome, or more commonly patients taking a variety of different medicines, such as the diuretic, water tablets, low-dose aspirin, some of the antihypertensive medications, and in patients who've had transplants, some of the medicines that we use to prevent rejection of organs, and cyclosporine would be the most common drug that's used for that purpose. Additionally, we know that some of the proteins in beers and real ales contain a lot of guanine, which is a type of protein that's degraded down the purine metabolic pathway, and therefore people drinking a lot of beer have an increased risk of gout. However, again, it's a little bit of a myth that other forms of alcohol increase the risk of gout. And we also know that patients with skin psoriasis, particularly severe skin psoriasis, have an increased risk of gout because there's a strong turnover of the skin cells, and therefore the body's degrading proteins, which increases the urate levels. In a very young patient who develops symptoms that would suggest that they have a gouty arthritis who've been otherwise fit and well, then we always worry that there's an underlying blood disorder, because again, if the blood is being degraded and remade quickly, that increases the purine metabolism, increases uric acid, and therefore we always investigate those patients quite thoroughly for any underlying hematological problems. A typical acute attack of gout affects a peripheral joint, predominantly the big toe. And we think the reason for this is gout likes the colder joints, and it predominantly likes joints that are slightly damaged. And because the big toe joint is a fairly mobile joint, it's more likely to develop a little bit of osteoarthritis or wear and tear arthritis, and therefore tends to be the target joint for the first attack of gout. Gout is one of the most inflammatory and painful conditions that we know about, and during an acute attack the joint will become exquisitely painful, swollen, red, very tender. Sometimes it's so inflamed that the skin overlying the joint actually sloughs off because of the inflammation. And most patients who've had an acute attack of gout will tell you that they're unable to weight bear through the joint, and even a sheet touching the affected area at night can cause immense pain. The natural history of gouty arthritis is that patients generally experience acute episodes infrequently, but as the gout is left untreated over time, because the uric acid levels build up in the joints, then the attacks become closer together and more frequent, and often more joints are recruited around the body over time. So it becomes an increasingly chronic problem. If you leave it sufficiently long, then patients may develop tophi, which are the hardened nodules of gouty material that can cause damage to joints. And also, the gout becomes more of a chronic, smouldering, persistent inflammatory arthritis, and therefore some patients stop getting the very acute episodes at that stage, but have a persisting chronic inflammatory condition, which makes it more difficult to diagnose. And in some patients, they're actually diagnosed with things like rheumatoid arthritis rather than acute gout, because it looks very similar to that group of patients. Lifestyle factors in managing gout, of course, are very important. So making sure that you're well hydrated, that you have a good diet rich in fruit and vegetables, and if you are a bit of a carnivore, probably reducing your intake of red meat is a useful thing to do, making sure that you don't overdo the alcohol. But we know that actually, in terms of the morbidity of gout, lifestyle factors play a very small part in that, maybe 10% at best. And therefore, most patients who have gouty arthritis will require medication to cure their gouty arthritis. How patients cope with an attack of gout is very individual to each patient, but often we would suggest stopping weight bearing on the affected joint if it's a lower limb joint, and obviously if it's an upper limb joint, maybe resting the joint in a sling, something along those lines. Also, icing the joint regularly can be quite effective. And then there are a number of acute treatments that we can use, such as the anti-inflammatory medications, colchicine, and steroid, which can be given in a variety of different ways, either as an injection directly into the joint, or as a course of tablets, or as an injection into the patient's bottom muscle to settle things down. Gout predominantly affects people of working age when it first develops, and therefore it can have a big effect on people's work lives and their social lives when they're experiencing an acute flare, because they may have to miss days at work. I've had one chap who works as in heavy manual work, who has to wear specific footwear, and his employer would not allow him to wear any alternative footwear, and therefore he had to go on sick leave, which was unpaid for a period of time whilst his acute attacks were settling down, which clearly had a big financial impact on the family. And therefore gout can affect different people depending on their circumstances in many different ways. Some of my more elderly patients who suffer with heart failure, diabetes, problems with their chest, poor kidney function, often find that they can manage all of those other problems, but the acute pain that they experience from their gout is the thing that causes them most stress, and can become extremely depressed by it because it limits their limited mobility, and therefore in terms of quality of life, often treating their gouty arthritis can have an enormous impact on their quality of life, even though they have lots of multiple morbidities or on lots and lots of medications already. So it is an extremely debilitating problem to have and disease to have, but unfortunately it's not seen as a priority condition for treatment.